Welcome everybody to tonight's webinar. Great to have everybody on board. You can see all the numbers coming in as we're speaking. Now, as you can see on our screen there, I've got Ian here too, by the way.
Hi everyone, how you going?
As you can see on our screen there, we're going to talk about doing deals in regional areas. Now, the reason this has come up is because I've been talking to a number of students about the deals that they've done, deals that they've missed, negotiations that didn't quite go the way they thought they would have gone and couldn't see why. And they're all country deals. And the guys that were doing the deals were all from metropolitan areas. So I want to talk about the difference in dealing in regional areas, particularly when you're looking at non-commercial type properties and you're buying off somebody who perhaps isn't an investor, but might have just owned the property or inherited the property or, you know, selling their own home or whatever else. And even selling to country people. So it's buying and selling both ways. Now, I mean, everybody knows I'm from the bush. My son, he put it very aptly when I was negotiating on a country deal and he was with me. And, you know, we drove around in the car for probably 2 hours talking about cattle and hay and lucerne and, you know, just stuff, just country stuff. And when we got back into our car, my son, Justin, he said to me, he said, I didn't understand a word you said in the last two hours. Yeah. He said, you were like a pig in mud.
didn't realise how much you knew about cows.
Well, it was just stuff.
And know? What you can do to cows and what they eat and where
Stop.
They tread. And
what... He said, "What?" He came to me afterwards and he said, what's foot rot? He said, I thought foot rot was foot rot flats. Anyway, that's why we're going to do the session today. So Ian's going to help me out here. Not that he's a boy from the bush. He's a city slicker. So we're taking it from both sides.
So and as a city slicker, having, you know, done a fair few regional deals as well, there is a particular way that you have to be out there. And definitely if you go out there, if you go into regional areas with the city mind, you're going to find out very quickly that you're going to be out of your comfort zone.
But also don't try and bung it on either. Because that's pretty easy to see through.
Exactly. But they normally tell that I'm from the city when I'm wearing my Akubra and stuff.
That's one thing you don't do. Okay, so let's first of all talk about country agents. Now, when we're talking, you know, country agents, they're quite often, you know, they've been in the stock and station agents, which means they sell the cattle as well as the properties. Quite often it's a family affair. They know everybody. They're a great source of information. You've got to understand when you go into a smaller regional area, there's a high degree of likelihood that everybody knows everybody else. So you never, ever, ever say anything about anybody, even if you're being baited about, you know, another real estate agent in town or the publican or the owner or the whoever. You never, ever, ever say anything about anybody or give your impressions about anybody because they could be a relative.
Absolutely. And one thing, and that's quite true, they're going to be a multitasking office a lot of the time. There's one particular agency that I've walked into quite often and they've got a fridge with all the drugs and things that you give to cattle and all the ear tags and all of that sort of stuff just there because that's what they do. They're multitaskers.
Stock and station agents. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the first thing is you never, ever, ever judge a book by its cover. You know, I remember when I was a kid, one of the guys that I accredit for my want to be wealthy was a guy who I actually negotiated my first cow from, and I was a very, very young girl then. I can tell you I was, I don't know, 4 to 6 or something, but he always got around town in the dirtiest, grubbiest gear, and he was probably the wealthiest guy in the entire area. So, you know, you can't, you can never judge anybody by what they're wearing or their speech or how much, you know, they went to school or didn't go to school or anything. You know, you've really got to speak to the locals and try and be really, really interested in everything, in the place, in the area. You know, if you're coming in, you're new. And if you're coming in, you know, they want to see that you're not just going to be somebody that's going to, you know, rip the guts out of the town and take the money outside the town. You've got to be investing back into the town, both financially and emotionally.
Some of these areas also are going to, there's obviously going to be good parts of town and bad parts of town like there is for suburbs. And I've always found that if you go to the local police station, they will always give you good feedback about an area. If you go to them and say, look, I'm looking at buying in this area of town, and they'll quite honestly tell you a lot of the time. The corner stores, the petrol stations, the post offices, the hardwares, always worth the chat. I always like to look for the older style resident that have got some great stories and great understanding and history of the area. And you'll always get good stories out of them and an understanding of where you're going into and how confident they are for the future as well.
That's right. Something I kind of alluded to before, don't bung it on. Don't pretend. You know, if you're going to go into a town, don't put on the Akubra hat and go and buy some new R.M. Williams boots or something and, you know, a big belt buckle. That is not regional Australia. And you're just going to look like an idiot. You are.
You looked at me then. But it's true. Yeah, it is true. I mean, they'll spot you from a mile away. And, you know, that we've got Platinum that's a country, dairy farmer. And he says you can spot a city person from miles away if they're trying to be country.
That's exactly right. Don't roll up in your Audi or your BMW either, because I'm afraid in regional Australia, there's they don't like the poser, and flash cars are a signature of being a poser.
Yeah, and there's a preconceived conception that you're going to pay more for everything.
That's exactly right.
Just, you know, if you have to borrow an old ute from a mate, then do that and drive around. But don't turn up in a Beamer or a Merc or anything. They'll see you coming and they'll treat you that way too.
That's exactly right. This is important too. Now, this is important no matter who you're dealing with. You know, there's always a tendency for people to just talk and talk about themselves. People like to talk about themselves, which is why it's great to actually ask questions and listen to the answer. Listen to the answer, listen to the tone, listen to the context in which it was said, listen to just the way things are expressed, because it's important for knowing what the other side wants. Now, this is in everything. It's not just country areas, but this is in everything. Knowing what the other side wants so that then you can think on your feet and come up with a scenario or a deal that fits into what they need as well as what you need.
With it, yeah, and this, the reason there's a picture there of a horse and a cowie thing is because there's an agent that I speak to quite often, and we were doing what Dipner has taught me, and that's the third level questioning. That's becoming true and honest friends with the agents, because they're going to bring you the best deals. Now, so if you become good friends with agents, they're going to call you when their deal hits the table. Before it gets to the internet, you're going to get a phone call and say, I've got a deal for you. Now, remember, there's another 10, maybe 20 people that they're also going to call in regards to that. So the reason I've got that picture there is because there was one agent. I said, so what are you doing on the weekend? And she says, I'm going camp drafting. And I said, all right, that's fantastic. Let me know how you go. I had no idea what camp drafting is, right? So the first thing I do is I get back in the car, I hook up my wireless, and I look on YouTube camp drafting, and I see, and within 20 minutes I was then an expert of, you know, going
sure
out and turning
you
left.
You're on the back of a horse and trying to get the cow around.
No. But what I meant was I understood what camp drafting was. So when I spoke to her on the Monday, because I had to do that, I said, oh, how'd you go? You know, left turn, right turn, all of that sort of stuff. It's an interesting part of another bit of knowledge and understanding of what she did on the weekend. You know, are you competitive, and what level do you go to, and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, just you'll always find out information. Ask the questions.
That's exactly right. Weekends, you know, quite often the places are closed. It's not like in bigger cities where you're going to be able to get an agent on a weekend and go and have a look at properties and expect them to be there and show you around and all that kind of stuff. It's not what it is. They finish at, you know, 5-ish, 6-ish, whatever it is, depending on the day. They don't do weekends generally. You know, if you make an appointment, they will, but you got to make the appointment. You can't just rock up in town and expect that, you know, everyone's going to fall at your feet.
And this can be a catch for players, because you'll organise to go out. You'll be saying to yourself, oh, I want to do some research and I want to go out to that town. And you drive out there on the weekend only to find out that the place is shut down and you've got nothing. So you always have to plan ahead with those things.
That's right. Now, information is your friend. You know, finding out as much as you possibly can about the entire scenario. I find in regional areas particularly, the old agents are quite often, they're a wealth of information, absolutely, but they can also be, if you've got a moving market, let's go step back a bit, if you've got a moving market, particularly an upward moving market, a lot of the older agents that have been in town for a long time still remember when things were, you know, a tenth the price that they are now. And when you've got an upward surging market, particularly when they've, you know, it's turned into a mining town or something like that, a lot of the older agents won't have caught up in the early stage. They certainly will quickly, but in the really early stages when things have just moved and they're really, you know, you can see the town moving, buying off the older agents, I've found personally, to be a great thing and to be able to pick up pricing that is what it was maybe 6 months ago or 12 months earlier when things hadn't started to move at that point in time. The other thing is that a lot of the older agents in these towns are not on the computer. You know, they don't know how to list a property. My daughter actually, she's studying property economics and developing, and she's working full-time for one of the local real estate agents. And today she was actually at his mate's place who does commercial real estate, helping him do really simple things like, you know, put a property up onto realestate.com and copy a – she said, I can't believe it. She said, he didn't know how to copy a URL and email it. and he said, you pay me $150 just to do that for him.
That's $150 a URL. Copy and paste. What a good job. I want to know that commercial agent. I'm visiting him tomorrow. You know that
– at the secret.
Yeah. And especially with when they've been in town, they all know each other. They'll know the person in the council that's the right person to talk to. You know, if you need to talk about sewerage, I'll go and see Ned. He knows about that. He's been there forever. And there's a couple of stories coming up later in the presentation about that. And it's really important to know that they're well connected.
Well connected, often related. So remember that. Well, you know, it goes back to my earlier comment, don't say anything bad about anybody ever. Don't mind read. You want to talk about this?
Yeah, mind reading is one of those things that people do and especially if you're a city person, and so take this for what it's meant, okay? I don't mean to offend any real estate agents in the city. Majority of people when speaking to a real estate agent in the city is always looking for the second meaning of the sentence, always trying to work out what the agent's saying. In the regional towns generally, they're just telling it the way it is. And if they tell you if there is another guy looking at buying, it's probably going to be true. Whereas in the city, they say, oh, look, there's a couple of offers on the table. You're always wondering whether it's actually there. So don't mind read too much. They're generally going to give you a straight up, this is how it is. And also, you know, they'll know the history. They'll know the information around it. And they're not telling you the history for any other reason except that they know it. There's no ulterior motive to it. So don't mind read too much because you'll get yourself in trouble out there.
Mm. And the other thing I might just say about agents in general is, you know, in the city, real estate investors generally, they tend to crash and burn agents. Now, you know, I've talked to a lot of real estate agents over the years and they know, they recognise what's going on. But crashing and burning is about, you know, oh, well, if you're not going to sell to me, I'll go to the next guy. There's another property. There's another deal. There's another agent I can talk to. Whereas in regional country towns, there might only be a handful. You know, there might only be a few, and they'll all be connected. And if, you know, if you're the idiot, it'll soon get around town that.
and once you're the idiot, it's hard to shake that.
Oh, you're gonna go to another town.
I've been a village idiot my whole life. So, just with the connection, I know that the sound drops out every now and then. Sometimes it's your end, sometimes it's our end. We can't do much about that.
Okay. Do not try and be above anybody. I would say this is the case everywhere, anytime, dealing with everybody, whether you're dealing with a tradie in the country or the city or an agent or a buyer or a seller. You know, it's a bad trait to have, to come across as being superior or better than anybody else. And it certainly does not serve you, and it does not get you the deal that you could have got had you not had that attitude.
Yeah, and city people, as I am, honestly play power games. And you may, whether it's an unconscious thing or not, you're brought up, you know, and dog-eat-dog sort of world. Within reason, you know what I'm saying. And so you go out there and you just be. And if you are who you are, and you just tell them what you're looking for, and you be upfront with them, they're going to do that to you with you regardless. And it'll work out. Really careful with hand gestures and expressions, and especially facial micro expressions in the face. They'll catch you out every time. Because they're looking for honesty in you, and if you're giving them signs, anything other than that, they'll start to lose a little bit of what they think could be done in a deal.
You're the village idiot again.
Yes, that's right.
Jargon again. This applies everywhere. You know, don't try and be big note. Don't try and use the jargon and, you know, throw in the BAs and the DAs and the,
yeah,
you know,
and the options and, yeah, and, you know,
just keep things as simple as possible. Now, this is something that has been a motto of mine for a long time, and it's something that I do regardless of where I am, whether I'm in the bush or I'm not. You know, just keep things as simple as possible. And even if you're dealing, you know, at boardroom level, there's things that I've done at boardroom level that you don't try and throw in the big words, because sure as eggs, someone's going to misunderstand, and then the whole deal will go out the window because they either don't fully understand, even though they say they understand, or they misunderstand. So keep things very, very simple. It's why I actually write things down. It's why, I mean, Ian teases me all the time about, you know, being old fashioned, using a papyrus reed, but I write things down and I handwrite it and I draw pictures, but I am very visual. But I find that works for me because people can see it. And, you know, when you add words, you can add pictures and whatever else, and it works.
And the jargon can go the other way too. So you may need to stop them sometimes and ask, what did you mean by when you said that word? You know, when you're talking about
camp drafting,
foot rot.
Foot rot.
So you may need to start the other way and say, sorry, I'm, you know, just explain it. You know, I obviously have never heard that term before. What does that actually mean? And then they'll slow it up for you and explain to you.
Yeah, that's true. Slow down. I mean, it's just a continuation of what I just said there before. Don't try and complicate things. Don't try and make things sound hard or complicated. Slow the pace down. Make sure that, you know, everybody understands exactly where everybody's at each stage. On both sides, you understanding, them understanding, everybody.
Yeah, and the passive aggressive thing, it's not going to work for you. It's you know, that in the city there's an expectation that if you ask for a planner to do something for you in 2 days, that you follow them up in 2 days. Just be aware that the stuff will just take so much longer. The plumber will tell you that he'll be there next week, but you know, he's gone fishing instead because you know, the fish were biting, and he'll be there next week, the week after. It just, if you're going to get frustrated again because they're smaller towns, you're going to make an enemy of everyone when you
and
won't
make
it.
And there may only be one plumber.
Yeah, that's right. And sometimes they can hold you to ransom. So you've got to really work in with the fact that you know that they're going to be there at some point. You want to try and get them there. The passive aggressive definitely won't work. They'll just get frustrated with you and it won't work out.
Some of the things that we're talking about now also apply to mining towns as well.
Yes.
And when we're talking about plumbers in mining towns or tradies in mining towns, they might not have gone fishing. They're probably at mines earning five times the money.
Yeah. I mean, I had a pool that was leaking, and from Sydney, and I must have rung.
It was in northern Queensland town.
Northern Queensland town. So I'm in Sydney. I rang four different plumbers, and they all said the same thing to me. Oh no, we don't do pools. That's not plumbing. So here I am, a head teacher in plumbing, teaching how to fix pools in my plumbing course, but they didn't do it. In the end, I had to get on a plane and fly up and fix it. It took me half an hour to fix the pump. Because none of them would touch it, and it's just the way it is.
In one of the places where we've got a block of units, there was 15 metres of guttering that needed replacing. How much do you reckon that they quoted us to do that?
Oh, 15 metres would normally cost you about $60 a lineal metre. So, you know, probably $300-$400.
$300-$400?
Yeah, probably $3,000 or $4,000. Is that what they wanted?
And the rest.
Really?
$17,000.
I would have done it for a fraction of the cost.
$17,000.
My fraction would have been 99/100. Yes, well, that's what happens.
Oh. Take your time. As it, you know, again, it's a follow-on from what we were saying before about keeping things understood, but also don't expect that you can fly into town, you know, do a great deal and leave. Regional towns and mining towns are the same pretty much. You need to invest a little bit of time and effort into the people and the area and the areas and all that kind of stuff. And it is much, you can do a fair bit from your office, but you need to go. And you need to go and eat at the pub, and you need to hang out, and you need to go and talk to the police, and you need to go and talk to the information centre, and you need to be there 3 or 4 or 5 days, you know, not just fly in one day, do a deal, and you're out.
Yeah, and also understand that these towns are small. Some of them are small, so it's unlikely that in the smaller ones that you're going to have their own real estate agent. So they're going to be travelling a reasonable distance from another town to come to meet you, and so that will mean that they will try and group appointments together. So if they know they've got to go drive for an hour and a half out to a town to meet you, well, they might actually make a few other appointments at the same time. So you're going to have to work in with them to make sure it lines up with them and with you. And also, you know, I also like driving through in a small regional town, I like to drive up and down every street and watch and look at every property, take notes of all the properties that I see, that especially if they're a new build, find out what's been done in there. And I also like to visit the council and have a bit of a chat to the council.
Now, I know we've done this before, Ian, but you and I have done a very good webinar on, you know, taking pictures and plotting them on your phone and taking notes and things like that, because as sure as eggs, you get back to your home, you're going to forget this property or that property or whatever else.
Yeah, I mean, Jason does it really well and has taught a lot of people with your phone that you might take a photo of a place and make sure your GPS is turned on. Then take a note to say, you know, this photo was taken at that location and this is what you thought about it.
Yeah. Computer literacy, you know, people, it's getting better. It's definitely getting better. But some agents are just not going to be on the internet still. You know, in some of the smaller country towns, just like the guy that, you know, my daughter went to help out today, he's even Maroochydore, but it's not exactly a small country town. Don't expect everybody to be on the internet and that, you know, that all the properties are going to be on realestate.com or whoever else, you know, wherever else you're looking.
What I've found in these smaller towns also is especially when you're looking for planners and whatever, engineers, that you're going to find, I'm thinking of one particular town that I've done a fair bit of work in, and it's it's an engineer and he's got to be near 85, I think, you know, he's been in the war and all of that sort of stuff. Great type bloke to talk to, really practical. Ask him anything in internet, email, forget it, right? So I automatically become friends with the young receptionist that's at the front desk, simply because you know that if you need to send something to him and he needs to send something back, that I can get her to do that for me. So I send to her, I ring her, I say, I've just sent an email, I need George to have a look at this, can you ask him to do something and then maybe scan it and send it back to me tomorrow? So that's really important that you do get to the right people that do have the ability to get information backwards and forwards electronically for you.
Yeah, that's right. if you're the newcomer in town and, you know, you go in there and you're obviously looking for a property, you're immediately perceived as being, you know, a bag full of money. And there's immediately going to be a mistrust to the newcomer. It's more noticeable in a regional area, but it actually exists everywhere. You know, we get it here in Queensland. Somebody comes up here, oh, big Sydney buyer, you know. So everyone thinks, oh, wow, the big Sydney buyer's in town. And, you know, they immediately think they've got a lot of money because Sydney's perceived as being it's got higher property prices and things like that. So they must have a lot of money. You need to quell that. You need to be as normal and everyday as possible. And I would even say, if you come from Sydney, don't tell them you come from Sydney. You know, you're from the big smoke.
You're from New South Wales. With these two, if you're going to go into a bidding war, not that it's going to happen too often out in regional, they will take a local. They will, you know, so you've got to be aware of the fact that it's not just the money. There is other matters that come into this. Flexibility for the settlers, how quickly they want the money or how slowly they want to move out. There's all that sort of component that you need to look at as well.
Okay, don't assume anything. It's obviously something that you should keep in mind for all negotiations everywhere. And, you know, this gentleman we've got on the screen here, his name's Clive. Now, Clive looks like this, and he walks around the streets of Toowoomba, and he's lived there all his life. I think he left school when he was...
He said he left in high school, but it's only because the school was 4 foot off the ground. He called it a high school. I think he left school at 12 or 13.
Yeah, about that.
And went off and started working in a sawmill. He learnt every job in the sawmill. So by the age of 17, he had the head job in the sawmill, and they couldn't replace him. I think he went to the war at some point, I think, then became a builder's labourer because he wasn't smart enough to go into church. He wasn't smart enough to go into TAFE to learn to become a carpenter or builder. So he worked as a labourer, and he watched them and he said, well, I think I can do that quicker. And he ended up starting to build chook sheds. Then he built sheds. Then he built houses. Then he bought blocks of land, and he just went on from there. This guy could turn over a house. He would ring the client and say, look, I'm starting on Monday, and by the following Tuesday, they were moving into a brand-new three-bedroom house.
Not today, though.
Oh, he knocks them over pretty quick.
Yeah, but now you've got council regulations.
Yeah, that's right.
And all that other stuff to go through at the moment, which, you know, in his day, they might have been a little bit different.
Well, the long and short of Clive.
The point is that last year or the year before, I can't remember now, he donated $50 million to medical research here in Queensland. Yet, you know, he's the guy you can sit down and have a cup of tea with in the local cafe. You know, he looks like that. He walks down the street looking like that. That's who he is.
He's got a property in Brisbane that gives him $150,000 passive income per week. It's crazy.
Per week.
And he bought it for cash.
it was
many millions of dollars.
Be genuine. As Ian said before, you know, you don't try and bung it on. Don't lie. Don't try and be something you're not. Just be as true and honest and genuine as you can possibly be.
And if they grow to like you, if you can have a bit of a yarn with them and a joke around, when it comes to making the offer, they will go to the vendors and they'll say, look, these guys are a great bunch of people and they really want to buy the property. You know, let's have a good consideration.
Let's see if we can make it happen.
Yeah, let's make it happen.
Yeah.
So, yeah, be up front.
Now, if English is not your first language, just say so. You know, don't say it, you know, don't think it's a detriment or anything. Just come out and say, look, English is not my first language. So I might say things that are a bit funny or whatever. I don't mean any, you know, get the words wrong or whatever else. English is not my first language. So, you know, just help me out. And people will. That applies everywhere, not just in country areas. something I, you know, my husband doesn't speak English as his first language either. And some of the things he says, I think, oh, that sounds a little abrupt. But he doesn't mean it that way. It's just that when you have his language translated directly into English, that's how the words come out. But it comes off a lot harsher than it actually is meant.
It's like my dad. My dad, his accent doesn't allow him to say the letter U. And with a surname like Ugarte, that's a bit of a problem. And he doesn't call it a urinal. He calls it a wee trough.
Country tradies. I think we've talked about this already, but, you know, there might only be one in town. So don't get offside with them. You know, keep all the tradies on board. It will take longer. And if they don't like you, the price will be doubled. So, you know, it's something that you have to bear in mind in dealing in country areas generally, depending on how small the country town actually is.
If they don't like you, they just won't turn up.
No, they won't do it. Referrals. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, so one other thing about these country towns is they all often work with each other. So you've got a plumber, he'll know an electrician, he'll also know a builder. So there'll be lots of ability for you to be able to build your team around the team that already exists. So once you find one, it's great to be able to pull them together. Most of these regional tradies are going to be very handy because they have to be adaptable. They have to be able to do multitasking on most of the stuff that they do. You know, so I know there's a few plumbers around the country that I've used for some of our properties where I know that they can replace a deck. I know, though it's not technically legal, but if they need some emergency work, that can be done. So I always like to make sure that I have a good basis of a couple of good tradies so that I can always refer to them all the time. Asking the questions, just keep on asking. And as soon as, remember though, that as soon as you upset one of those in that team, it's quite likely that you're going to upset the whole team. So be very, very careful. It's just a large game of diplomacy out there. And it's a game of just being nice and being yourself, not being anything other than that.
Do you know the biggest way to upset a tradie?
Don't pay them.
Pay them late. That's exactly right. Don't pay them or pay them late. So please, when you're dealing in a country town, one of the things you don't want is getting a name for being a slow payer or a no payer or anything like that, because it will spread like wildfire.
The thing, it doesn't matter whether you're regional or city. If a tradesman gives me a bill, I will pay it within a day or two. I know that that's how they draw their wages. If I have a big job on offer, I have my tradespeople know that they have to give me a bill by Thursday. Thursday afternoon, I look at it. Friday, Christine will put money in the bank account so that Monday they've got money showing in their bank account. Obviously, if it's their final payment, we'll go over the job first. Though if it's a payment that's due and they've done the work, I always say pay them up front. The reason you do that is because when you get yourself into a jam and you need someone there quickly and you need something done as an emergency, they will remember that you'll be paying them that day or the next day.
That's right.
And they'll do the job.
Materials can be more expensive and harder to get. So you're going to have to keep that in mind, particularly if you're doing any renovation type work and that sort of thing, that your costs could be higher than they perhaps would be in a city area. However, you know, the tradies generally have a bit of a can-do attitude towards getting things done, and quite often we'll be able to think of other ways to do things. So it really depends on who you got on board.
Yeah, and having worked with a few students in around the materials, you know, I can think of one town where if I went and bought a small bag of gyprock, which would normally cost about $4.80, in this particular town, they wanted $20.80 for the same bag.
$17,000 guttering.
And so what I've worked out with a few students, I've said, look, you're doing a renovation here. You've got a whole bunch of tradies helping you out. It may be worthwhile you flying into the major town nearby and hiring a ute or a trailer and a car, filling it with all the things that you need. So you make sure you've got to put a whole inventory together with the tradespeople of what they need and fill your ute and drive out, pick it all up and drive to the job and drop it all off. Now, be prepared that you may need to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning one out of 1, 2, or 3 days to drive out and get a major lot of materials to drive back out again so that they've got it there by 7, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock in the morning so they can continue doing their work. And that's something I'm prepared to do myself. If you're not prepared to do that, then you have to find other ways and probably pay more money.
This is where planning really becomes important. One of the jobs we did last year on one of our properties, it was a block of units, and we bought everything locally or further up the coast and got them on trucks and had them all delivered.
Yeah.
So everything was delivered on site as they needed them, or actually before the job was even commenced.
And sometimes you might load a container depending on where it
well,
is,
that's actually
and,
what
and
did, yeah.
Yeah, and do it that way. Asking their opinion, always important, because they've done it before. They know where they can do stuff, how they can do stuff. So don't be afraid to ask questions. The older properties in these towns have a particular way of being built. So that means that they will have experience in what's in the walls. They'll have experience with whether there's asbestos in there. They'll have experience on how to treat a lean on a wall in one direction, or if the piers are going in another way, because they actually know the soil that's under the ground. And so they might say, well, look, you know, you only have to dig down 400 and reconcrete on that one there, where others might say, well, 900 we're going to have to do because the house is going to move otherwise. So they're going to know the local area really well.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, you cannot go past the Australian currency here, and a slab of beer will normally buy you up to $300 worth of gear, even though I don't know what a slab of beer costs, so I don't drink. But
50 to 80.
Far out, that's expensive. But, you know.
Oh, you can get some for cheaper.
It doesn't, you know, I am quite often, once I'm going out to do the final inspections, it's quite often that if it's Queensland, I'll buy Forex. If it's Victoria, I'll buy VB, and if it's New South Wales, I'll buy Tui's New, and I'll give them a carton, because if the jobs run.
What do you buy in WA?
In WA, I don't know. I've never had to buy a slab in WA. I don't know. What do they do? I don't know.
Maybe some WA people can write into us.
Close to Mexico or something. I don't know.
Mexico? It's the other direction.
So whatever. Corona, no doubt, because of the... I'll buy the lemony bits that go in the top.
Do you know why they have those lemon bits?
No idea.
They actually put the they started putting the lemon on top of beers to stop the flies from landing on their beer.
Really?
Yeah, that's true. Absolutely true.
Right. And Boags. Swan Lager.
There we go.
Thanks, guys. Councils. Councils in the area are going to be good one way and bad the other. As far as paperwork is concerned and trying to find out old plans and you know, whether the building is legal, it's going to take time in those councils, because they will, a lot of the older ones, not nowadays, but in recent years, would physically have to actually go, and the file would be in storage. They'd have to order the file. That would take a week or two to get out there. And then you'd turn up and there wouldn't be much in there. At the same token, though, the flip side of that is that they're quite helpful. They will allow you to do things without the red tape that you have to go through in the city style areas.
One example of that is Jason and Amy, who, you know, you've heard us talk about before. Their first deal they did was out in a little tiny country town called Narandra, and they were the typical city folk going to the country to go and do their first deal. And we laugh at Jason about the going to the hardware store, and they selling him because he wanted to paint the roof, and they sold him a 2-inch paintbrush to paint the roof. So, you know, all those kind of things, they're funny stories. But one of the things that they did in the Narandra was actually subdivided the block. And literally, Amy drew up on a sheet of paper the square meterage of the block. She drew a line through the middle of it, submitted it to council, and they stamped it and went, yep, approved. Subdivision done. which you're not going to get in the city area, I can tell you.
Joe says he bought the builders in WA, James Bogues, and it took him another 3 weeks to do it. They got pissed. The staff and the council are really important too. And one of my experiences was that I had to actually build over a sewer. And everyone knows, and Dipner and I talk constantly, that building over sewer is problematic. So I befriended the sewer inspector and, you know, we started talking to him, and I were, and I, by asking questions, I found out that he was a plumber in the area and he's now the plumbing inspector. And so I talked to him about business and I talked to him about how hard it is to make money and our clients are no good, because I know the reason he was in that job was because he was sick of dealing with clients. So I built rapport with this inspector. He stamped and approved without concrete encasement for me to be able to do that. And he also said, look, all I want you to do is throw a camera up the sewer so that we can make sure that the sewer is in good condition. I said, oh, this is miles from anywhere. It's going to cost me a fortune. He says, I'll tell you what, I will get the local guys here, the plumbers inside the council. I'll tell them to go up there and throw the camera up, because I reckon there could be a problem with that sewer, and I'll just say that it's a maintenance issue, and they'll put the camera up for me and then we'll have a look. So I managed to save probably in excess of 20 grand just out of a few conversations with that plumber.
That's right. Turnover of staff?
Yeah, so especially mining towns. When the staff turn over, you're losing a large amount of intellectual property. And so trying to keep them in there and knowing them. So I always make sure that if I'm in a town and I'm doing a job, that I'm constantly ringing them. Some of these developments can take you a year, 2 years, and you would hate to miss out on the staff member that's moved on. So you want to know ahead of time that they are going on. And I always ask them, how are you going? You know, what are you up to? Just making sure that you're going to be around for a little while longer. And that might seem like an absurd question, but at least I know if they're thinking about going, that I can find the next person and get and make sure that Catherine here is talking to the next person that's taking over. Generally, the junior employee, if you have meetings with a council, you'll find that the junior employee is the one that's actually doing all the reading, because the person that's been in the planner that's been in the council forever hasn't read the new planning laws, and always looks to the junior to make sure that what they're saying is correct, because there's a new draft plan or something's come into the council.
Mm. Meet face to face if you can. Always try and go and do things personally. I mean, I know there's going to be distance and travel and all of that kind of stuff, but you will get a better result by dealing with somebody directly rather than trying to, do it at a distance, because it's not always possible, and it is slowly changing, even in the bush. Emails are changing, obviously phones, et cetera, but if you want to negotiate on something, you're gonna do it better. It's gonna be easier, and you're going to save money, in my opinion, if you can do it face to face.
And definitely, the terminology is different from state to state, and it's different from region to region. So you really need to know how to explain things rather than using the reason word, because you might lose them. You'd hate to go into a pub and ask for a pot when you're supposed to ask for a midi. I don't know why we're using beer here, but anyway. So knowing, talking, again, going back to the jargon of options and all that sort of stuff, just explain it in words and let the legal people. That's the other component here, that you're likely to have your legal person who's city-based dealing with a country-based lawyer. And if it's an outside-the-box deal, they're going to have to come you're going to have to probably get your legal person to coach the other side. That's why I love Pacific Law. It's so easy to say to Calvin and Derek and David, look, I'm doing this deal out here. I think we're probably going to get some questions from the legal person out there and talk about it. Sometimes they come back with, no, he understands it, and I explained it to him and he's fine with that, and they're signing contracts tomorrow. Very important to make sure that your team in here is also knowledgeable and being able to talk to legal people out there.
That's honestly a lawyer that can coach the other side through a different kind of deal is worth their weight in gold.
Because, yeah, I mean, a legal person is there to protect their client. And if you've got someone that can coach and say, yeah, I understand what you're saying there. I can understand that you feel that your client may, lose out here. Just remember, though, this, and this will protect them. And that's really important.
Yeah, that's right. Patience. It's a virtue.
Yes. It's one of those things that, like I said previously, they will do it in their time. It will take time, and you've got to plod along, be nice to them. None of the passive aggressive, it won't work for you. You're just going to have to suck it up sometimes and know that it takes some time. I constantly am ringing, I'm probably dealing with 4 regional councils at the moment, and I always have the same point of contact. Whether they like me or not, I don't know. At the same token, though, I know that when I ring, I'm courteous. I explain what I want. I tell them that I've just sent them an email, and that when they can get back to me as soon as they can, that I'm ready, and I'll give you a call in a little bit. I don't say time anymore, because I used to say 2 days, and that was too soon. And then I said next week, and that was too late for me. So I give them now a call if I expect something within a few days, just to make sure. I put a reminder in my phone to ring them, and I'm just courteous about it. Or if I drive out there, I'll tell them that I'm coming and I make an appointment with them.
That's right. It's not a power struggle. This is not something that you, it's not a win-lose. It's not a victory. It's not any of that kind of stuff. If you can create a genuine win-win scenario, you will be surprised at how many deals will come your way. And the referral deals, like, you did pretty good on this one. Do you want the next one? And I've got so-and-so down the road or whatever else. And really try and work out what you want and try and serve that need.
Yeah, if you do pick up a deal and it works for you in that town, you will be able to work with that agent again and again. And you'll be able to sit down with them and say, listen, you know that one that we bought down the road there? Do you reckon there's anyone else in town that would consider that? Oh, actually, I heard down the pub yesterday that someone was thinking about it. I'll go and ask them and I'll get back to you. That's for them is easy money. It's giving you a win. And if someone is truly interested in selling, then that's a positive for them as well. And so you will have this whole relationship that develops, and it can go on for many periods of time. I've dealt with one agent that moved from one town to the next and given me similar deals in the next town, knowing that's the sort of stuff that we would look at.
Something I must say too is whenever you've got a market that isn't a hot market, and obviously regional towns fall into that category, it's a perfect opportunity to do a terms deal. Whereas it doesn't need to be a normal deal. There's not a lot of buyers around. You can really kind of cut the deal that works for you. So you can do no money down deals. You can do vendor finance deals. You can do, staged payment deals. You can do options. You can do all sorts of things. Anything that you can think of, and anything that you can articulate to the other person how it might be able to work for them, is a possibility of a deal. And just being able to add value, to properties while you've got it under secured under a contract or under an option, and then go and add value to it to be able to then, buy it with the equity already built in, all sorts of things. Basically, a lot of the stuff that we talk about on No Money Down Deals, there's a webinar on No Money Down Deals. Go and listen to that again, because they're a lot easier to do, I think, in the country areas and in commercial deals. Now, that's probably my bias. I would admit it probably is that I see those deals more frequently in commercial and in regional areas. But I've never had a problem doing a no money down deal in a regional area.
No, I agree fully that the people are more flexible in the regional areas to do terms deals.
Yep.
Because they're ready to be spoken to. They're ready to be explained that this is the reason why we're doing it, and this is why we need to have it. And usually,
and there's not a lot of buyers around, so they might have to wait a year to sell it to somebody else.
And so they're not in a particular rush most of the time. If they are in a rush, there's ways of being able to help them out in that too. one student that went and bought, what happened? He wanted to buy this thing regionally, and it was 400,000, which is a lot of money for this type of town. And the people that owned it wanted to come in, had to be closer to the hospital. So he went and bought in the city. So he went and bought, he paid their rent to live near a hospital for 6 months while he went out there. He didn't own the property, and he did the work on the property and made it work for him. And, you know, so he just factored in the rental versus what it would have cost him in interest anyway. And he was ahead by putting them up and renting.
Another student I remember bought a block of 7 units in a regional country town. Positive cash flow, run down, needed a bit of renovation. The guy had owned them for a lot of years and he was just cashing out and didn't, you know, he probably bought them very cheaply a long time ago. And they did a vendor finance deal. I think the owner vendor financed him 40%. So I think he borrowed 70% from the bank. He got vendor finance of 40% from the owner, which meant that he had a little bit left over to go and do renovations and pay his stamp duty and all the rest of it. He got positive cash flow from day one, and he could just poke along and slowly renovate and increase the value and increase the rental.
Yep. They're doable. They're out there and they're ready to happen.
Absolutely. And have fun. You know, don't get so stressed about things. Treat it like an adventure. Treat it like it's fun. Treat it as an experience, like going on a holiday.
It is. And I've said that constantly, that if you're going to look at a town, get in a car and drive out there. Don't go, you know, and do a tour. Do a tour of a whole area. Don't just... Dipner and I constantly talk about 3 strategies, 3 areas. So pick a regional area that you like and drive through 3, 4, 5 towns and get a feel for it. Drive up the streets. And what you feel about a town will be completely different to me when I drive through it. And that's just the way it's going to be. So understand that that's there. Very quiet mob tonight, not asking many questions.
Very quiet.
Get to understand that there is an experience behind what you're doing. And there's a lot of these towns, you'll fall in love with them. You fall in love with the fact, and I'm not saying emotionally, you fall in love with the fact that you've done deals there, that you've done well, that you've... And especially regional areas. If you've got low starting cash or no cash, low serviceability or no serviceability, this is the breeding ground for you to be able to step into the market. I've looked on here and watching a few of the people here, and I'm looking at this is a style of deal that you need to do.
I was talking to a young couple the other day, and they didn't have a lot of money, and they were saying, I don't know, whether they should keep saving, but we found this deal in such and such a town, a small country town, for $30,000. Do you think we should buy it? I said, what does it rent for? And they said, about $110 a week. I'm going, what? And they said, it needs a bit of work. I said, great. What would it be worth when you fix it up? I said, probably 80 or 90. And I said, you're asking me whether you should buy it or wait for something better?
Yeah, it's such a – and those properties are forever.
There's a lot of cheap stuff in the bush.
Yeah, and there's no need to sell them. If they're positive cash flow, it's worth going.
It's worth going out there and having a look.
Yeah, Facey, I've seen several cash flow positive regional areas, but then have reservations about the prospect of capital growth or resale. Can you speak about this? Oh, I'd love to speak about this.
Ignore it. You're not there for capital growth. You're there for cash flow.
What you're doing is...
And what you make on the
deal. Yeah, so capital growth is not a big thing in for me. If I get it, it's an absolute bonus. When you're starting with little, when you can get into a deal that costs you $30,000 plus stamp duty, 35 grand, let's call it, once you've done your legals, and you can spend $10,000 or $15,000, it now owes you $55,000 and it revalues at $80,000, you've got your 55 grand back on an 80% loan, and you've got positive cash flow and you go on to the next deal. So being able to maintain and they will grow. We're not talking that they'll grow like a capital city, but they will grow. And so in 10 years' time, what are they going to be worth? Probably 50% more, whereas a big town might be 100% more. So, you know, you play with that game, but at the same time, it's not hurting you. It's adding to your cash flow, and you've added another other property to your portfolio. Dipner says, real wealth comes from accumulating, not flipping.
See, you know, it kind of depends on where you're starting at. If you've got plenty of equity and serviceability, you don't need to go to the bush. Would you go? Look, if you've never done a deal before, I would, just for the experience. I would to learn the ropes and give it a go. And it's not going to hurt you, you know. It's not going to be a deal that could make or break you when you're at the lower end of town. If you are starting off with very little, either you've got no serviceability or you've got no equity or very little of both, go bush, go country, go and do a deal there and build yourself up. I was talking to my personal trainer today, who's a young kid just starting out, and I said, you know, just go and she wants to buy something in 5 years' time she's going to need $300,000 to buy it. I said, well, how much can you borrow? And we worked out she'd probably borrow about 50% of business. And I said, okay, so you've got 5 years to do it. So I said, go and do a little deal in the bush somewhere, and let's say you only made $30,000.
Only.
But if you made $30,000, you know, over 5 years, well, you know, there's your $150,000 to go and buy your business you want to go and buy.
Yeah.
Okay? But she's got to have a start, you know. And sometimes to get a leg up, like that young couple I was talking about before buying that $30,000 property, you know, that's all they can afford. So, you know, do they sit back and do nothing and save, or do they buy that property, do the renovation as they can? It's immediately rented anyway, increase the rent, increase the value up to, say, $80,000. So they might make, say, $40,000 on the deal all up, or $30,000 on the deal. But they've got equity in the deal, and they've got their 30, and they can go on to the next deal. It's a stepping stone, and that's what I think it is. It's not an either-or. It's a stepping stone. And the only one I would perhaps say, oh, don't worry about the bush, is somebody who has a large amount of equity and has experience and has plenty of serviceability. You don't need to go and do the bush.
Yeah.
Everybody else, I think it's a good learning curve. It's a good place to start, and for some people, it's the only place to start.
You've got a number for a regional town that you like to see population wise.
Look, it depends what for.
Yeah.
You know, if for financing, it is easier if the population is 10,000 or above. But that doesn't mean I wouldn't go and buy a little place in with 2,000 people. As long as it rents and, you know, it's got value and you could do something with it and all that sort of stuff, your growth is going to come out of what you do to it. Don't rely on natural growth. So it'll be very much what you do to it. If there's nothing you can do to it, well, you know, I'd probably pick something else.
You are going to have in the smaller towns a limit of the amount of tenants that are available, which is why you need to create the best product on the market. And that tenant, once they move into that place, they will be there forever. And you might do small rent increases to over the time, but it's still positive cash flow from the beginning. So, you know, it's not unusual to go into a really tiny, small regional town and see that they don't even have tiles, that they've got, what do they call that? Lamy panel instead of tilers. If you can create tiles at a cheap price, then do that because maintain the property. You'll keep them there much happier. And if you've got tenants there for a long period of time, they'll end up looking after stuff for you.
Now, something else I must say about tenants in regional areas, quite often, you know, if you're dealing in the low end of the market, there's a tenant most of the time. You know, we're not talking, you know, mining towns that ebb and flow and whatever. You know, you've got a town, you talk to the rental guys in town and say, you know, what is a rental like? Do you need more rentals? What do you need? Do you need two bedders? Do you need three bedders? Do you need houses? What do you want? Do they have to be fenced? Do people have dogs? You know, all of that kind of stuff. You talk to the rental people first before you even go and buy anything.
When doing a reno, is there a general formula to how much you should spend? Well, it's going to come down to what you have to do. We do have a rule of thumb. If you're going to do a cosmetic reno, so just a tart up and a look up, then you should be spending about 9% of the property value. If you're looking at knocking out some walls and adding maybe a new bathroom, new kitchen, then you're going to have to go to 16%. These are the rule of thumb. And if you're going to do a full structural, then you'll have to go 31% of the buy price. But, you know, definitely what you want to do in the regional towns is you don't have to do the top class renovation with granite tops and all the rest of it. You have to provide for the best in the area, which sometimes isn't that great.
There's a question here for somebody who's got cash, say 500 grand in cash, but no serviceability because they run their own business and write their income down very low. Well, you should be starting to talk to your accountant about writing your income up a little higher. But apart from that, you know, should they go and do deals in the bush and hold the properties? The bush would be good for flip deals. They're good for deals where you can go in and you've got 500 grand there in this particular case. You could go and do a deal and flip it and, you know, use to build up that income. And you do a couple of those a year, you know, you could make 100, 150 odd grand perhaps.
Yeah.
Just through that business. And that then in 2 years' time, that becomes your business and that gets counted for serviceability as income for banks, et cetera, because, you know, you set up a whole business to do that. The other thing is that, you know, you could joint venture with other people who've got serviceability and, you know, could go on the loan and you put in the equity and go and do deals. Again, if you're going to go and do that, I think the best type of those deals is where the product at the end can be split so that you're not tied together at the hip forever and a day. Even if you end up keeping part of it, that's okay, so long as you're not jointly owning things long term. But finding somebody with good serviceability to go and do deals together could be a good move for you. Doing cash deals, which, you know, obviously the bush is going to be cheaper for you to do that, and you've got enough money there to be able to go and do those kind of deals. You know, I've even seen someone in that scenario go and do a 100% vendor finance deal.
Yep.
Subdivision vendor finance, they didn't need the money, but they, you know, they wanted to be paid out at a point in time. They went and did a subdivision, 100% vendor finance, and, you know, made the money that way. So you weren't dealing with the banks. And obviously you've got your wrap deals and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, with $500,000, you will be able to go into a regional, a bigger size regional town and buy a block of units and strata title them. I mean,
you can strata title, you can subdivide, you can
do everything.
Probably you can develop.
Just cash. So, and like Dimna said, once you've done 2 years of tax returns where you've made chunk deals, that will count as income. High rental vacancy and selling. This is a really good point, question here about if there's a high rental vacancy, I would be very suspect about going into an area because you're going to be risking the fact that you're going to have a place sitting empty for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. So when you go in there and you can't find anything for rent, that's a good sign. Mm-hmm. At the same token, you know, drive into the town and have a look at the notice board and see what's for rent around the area. Now, the flip side of that is if you're buying in to chunk out, be really, really careful that there's not masses on the market. You know,
how long have they been on the market?
Yeah, and the amount of days on the market. In some of the views that you can get on Investar, you can get a map view where it will show you all the red dots and what's for sale. And in some of these towns, there is red dots all over town. There's hundreds of them in the middle of a town that's only got 5,000 people. And you're going, geez, that's a lot for sale. So if I'm going to buy a really cheap deal, if I renovate it, am I going to be in a position to be able to sell it? Because I've got so much on the market to compete against. Now, that doesn't mean that I wouldn't buy in that town, because if the rental vacancy is low, going in that town to buy the little deal that you can spend a little bit of money on and revalue for good money so that you can go back to the bank and get your money back and still put a tenant in at cash flow and you're going to keep that for a long period of time, well, it doesn't matter. If you're not going to sell it, it doesn't matter at all. So just accumulating another property into the portfolio.
That's right.
So be very careful with going into towns that have a larger volume for sale.
These days with you know, the access to records and council records and all of that kind of stuff, you can find out what things have sold for in the past, what is selling. And again, you know, ask the real estate agents. Ask the ones that aren't, that don't have a vested interest in selling you the property. You know, so go and talk to somebody else. Go and talk to the rental guys and ask them what's going on and what's renting and how long before something rents, all that kind of stuff is valuable information. It's all stuff that you should just naturally ask. When I was in England last year, I picked a town and thought, right, if I was going into this town, I don't know the area, where would I go? Who do I talk to? And because a lot of the stuff over here I do naturally because I kind of know my way around, obviously. But in England, I didn't. So I picked this town and I thought, all right, where's the best deal? Where can I get a cash flow deal here? If I wanted a cash flow deal, who would I talk to? Well, the very first person I wanted to talk to was a rental guy. And you sit down and talk to them and say, you know, what areas rent better? What kind of rents do you get? What kind of properties? What kind of finishes? What kind of, you know, do you, what things do you expect on those properties? How long do they take to rent? And that gave me, you know, I sat down with a map and drew pictures all over the maps, etc. That gave me three or four areas that I could concentrate on and say, people want these properties. Now, the market for cash flow in that particular town, it was just picked by random, I might add, was university students and close to town for the aged and close to the educational facilities for one bedders and two bedders and things like that. Now, you know, talking to the rental guys, they're not trying to sell me a property. So I could talk to them about, okay, but what if I bought an old barn and I converted it across into, you know, individual rooms or houses? Do you rent by the room? No, we don't do that. Okay. What, do you, you know, if I was converted, well, you could do that, but, you know, you won't get any in the areas that we want. They only want to walk, you know, a block to the uni. They only want to walk a block to the shops or the medical center or the whatever else. And I said, okay, well, what if I did this? What if I did that? You know, what? And I really got an idea of what the market wanted and how I could service that market the best. And then I can go and talk price. You know, I can then go and talk to the real estate, the selling guys about price and what's available and who's around and whatever else. Because I by that stage, I knew exactly what I had to be in to get the desired result that I wanted. That good?
Good.
Okay, guys, well, we have exhausted all your questions. I hope that's been interesting. I don't mean to be condescending in any manner at all, but you've got to understand that there is a difference in the way you need to negotiate and the way you need to deal with people. A lot of the stuff we spoke about applies to all markets, but understand that there is a little bit of a cultural difference across the general areas, across Australia even, not just regional to city areas. So I hope you've enjoyed that. Thanks, Ian, for helping me out.
Thank you.
We'll see you again in a couple of weeks' time. Thanks, guys. Catch you again.